put the folks in the back now. Good evening and welcome to our January 19th, 2006 special meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen for the purposes of hearing from applicants for the vacant seat on the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. That is our only item on our agenda for tonight. We're going to begin this evening by drawing names out of a plastic cup.
No,
out of a hat.
We're going to pitch him into the hat live here on television. And for all to witness, my understanding is that this meeting, this special meeting, is being broadcast on WCOM 103.5 Low Power FM, Carrboro's community radio station, which is a special treat. Welcome, WCOM listeners. We'll begin by drawing out of the hat the names of the first four candidates that we will hear from. Then we'll read out the list of the first four candidates. We'd like those four candidates to impanel themselves along the table opposite us here and to sit up there and answer a series of questions from the Board of Aldermen. We will then, once we've completed that process, we'll then hear from the next four applicants, and then from a final four set of four after that. We would like to ask that the applicants to the board voluntarily, those who are not impaneled at any one time and answering questions, we'd like to ask you all to voluntarily leave the room and repair to our conference room, which is that way in the building. There are some refreshments in there for you there. We'd like each of you all to hear as freshly as possible the questions that we're going to pose tonight. And we, out of fairness to one another, we ask that you comply with that. It's my opinion, based on North Carolina law, that we cannot require you to do that. And so we're not, I don't want to present that as a requirement or ground rule of the meeting, but we would ask for everyone to do that as a show of goodwill toward one another as potential applicants or as applicants for this appointment. Finally, when you are impaneled as applicants up here, we'll start in a random order and ask each of you a question. Each of the six members of the Board of Aldermen will ask one question, and you'll have 2 minutes within which to respond. We got a little system here to help you keep to a two-minute time limit in your responses to the questions, and the green will be go, basically. And I'll try to give you a yellow card when you're at 30 seconds remaining and a red card when your time is up. I've not used this timer before, so I apologize if it doesn't go all that smoothly right at the beginning. And are there any other ground rules that I'm forgetting, board members?
No, but there are refreshments in room 100.
There are refreshments available in room 100.
Cookies.
Which, again, is over here. So with that, I would like to ask our most junior member of the board.
Junior at something, something.
Randy Haven O'Donnell to maybe pitch the names into the hat. And Joel Hall Brown, our Mayor Pro Tempore, to draw the first four names and read those out for us. Or actually, you can hand them here. We'll have segregation of duties here.
Hey, don't put thriller hat.
Okay. The first name pulled for the first panel was John Merrill.
Okay. John, if you'll take the seat all the way at the end of the table down here, yes, thank you.
Okay.
Second name is Lydia Lavelle.
Hey, Ms. Lavelle, if you'll sit next to Mr. Merrill.
The third name is David Beck.
Mr. Beck, if you'll take your next seat.
And the last name for the panel, first panel, is James Carnahan.
Mr. Carnahan, if you'll come up. If we could go ahead and call out the second panel's name so that the folks who are in the second panel will know.
Okay.
And these folks get to go home after they finish if they like. Or stay.
It's going to be an engrossing evening, so I certainly welcome their.
The second panel, first person in the second panel is Katrina Ryan. Second person in the panel is Dan Coleman. The third person in the panel is Stephen Kwasik. And I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
All right.
And the fourth person is Kathleen Devine.
Okay, great.
So that means that if your name was not called, you're in the third panel. Okay.
The dreaded third panel.
All right. All right. You want me to call
yeah, let's read them out.
Yeah, read them out before me and hand them over to me.
Albert Vickers.
I don't know where they're going.
Robert Kirshner. David Marshall. And Alina Calameda.
You're not going to ask me to pronounce that one, are you?
She's not here for
that. Why is this here?
Interpreting this chart, we'll understand that the person seated in James Carnahan's seat in each case is going to be considered applicant number one, and two, three, four down the line like that. We're going to begin the question. I don't know whether Alderman Herrera went or whether Alderman, what did we hear from him?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to place Alderman Herrera's question at the end of the questioning cycle, so if he comes in here a little bit late, he can still participate. Otherwise, Alderman Herrera, I'm sure, will watch this entire event either on videotape, or I believe that it will be possible to watch essentially a rebroadcast of this within a couple of days on the Town of Carrboro website. There will be a streamed video of this event. Okay, so with that, the first questioner will be Ms. Jackie Dist. And incidentally, the first respondent will be applicant four, which is John Merrill.
And then we'll go
around the table. We'll start with John Merrill and then go to James Carnahan and down the line.
So just so for my clarification, everybody will answer. So when I ask a question, everybody that's there will answer that.
Yeah, I think right. We'll have your question and then four responses, and then the next question, which will be from Alderman Zaffron.
Okay. Who says Carver is not organized? My question is, can you please tell us about a time, whether in a professional or community service setting, when you changed your stance on an issue based on feedback from coworkers or from the community?
Well, from a professional standpoint, I've been involved in situations where I have had to make group decisions and also accumulate the information from the group and make a final decision. And oftentimes I would go into the group with almost a paradigm or already what my decision was going to be. And then after hearing the feedback and understanding some fresh information and different perspectives, I have been involved in situations where marketing perspectives and also in advertising and that sort of thing has always been or has come to the fore with some fresh ideas from employees or from fellow coworkers, and it's been very useful in coming up with a new decision and a new frame of mind.
Can you think of a particular instance in which that happened?
A particular instance? Well, there was one particular instance where I was recruiting physicians at the time. And when I was recruiting the physicians, we were having trouble finding the type of physician with this particular skill set, which was radiologist. And at the time, I had already beat my head against the wall trying to find these particular types of professionals. And what had happened is what we got together is in a meeting, and we basically hammered out some fresh ideas as to how to find these people. And sure enough, it was through the accumulation of the data that I received from this group that we did finally find those type of physicians. And I think that was a refreshing sort of experience, although it was in a professional environment, which is different and certainly not a type of environment that's, where you get a lot of personal satisfaction, but mm-hmm. It was good to see the dynamics work.
Thanks, John.
In November of 2004, you had a public hearing on the annexation. I attended that hearing. I went to that hearing and signed up to speak, and I was fully prepared to unabashedly and without reservation support the annexation as proposed. After listening to all of the comments of the speakers and really appreciating in particular the civility under the circumstances, I know that for a lot of people it was a shock. I had second thoughts about this and initiated a conversation on the planning board about it, and it had not been in our agenda, but we raised it, and we passed two recommendations to the aldermen. One was A, to postpone the actual implementation date for a year to 2007, and the second one was to divide the two annexation areas, Area A and Area B, in consideration of the issues around the Rogers Road, the historic Rogers Road community.
Thank you.
We ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I guess the situation that I that comes to mind for me is I'm also on the board of what previously was known as the National Community Capital Association, which is a national consortium of nonprofit lenders mainly. And we went through a name change process, and at the last meeting of the membership in the fall, it came to a vote. The board had voted to change the name to the Opportunity Finance Network, and at the membership meeting there was quite a vocal minority of folks who were opposed to the name change. And so every organization had two votes, and so I went in sort of fully supportive of the name change, though with some reticence. And after that, after listening to the debate and very legitimate concerns, ended up splitting my abstaining one vote and one vote for. So it was a little wishy-washy, but I think it's sort of reflective of my style or inclination to be to be in the keeping my mind open until the end and being more of a, in Myers-Briggs terms, more of a P or a perceiver rather than a judger, and just keeping going that way. So.
Thank you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yay.
Welcome. Lydia, go right ahead.
My example is one that has taken place at my place of employment. I work at the North Carolina Central University School of Law, and one of my tasks is every Monday to send an email to all of our students with a newsletter that I create, and it tells them about upcoming events for the week. And I've done this for 2 or 3 years, and I've always done it in a method. I'm no computer technician, but I've always done it in a method that I thought was the best way to do it, which was I pointed them to a link where they went to the webpage, and then they clicked on the weekly and opened it up. And I received feedback from an administrator that, Lydia, there's an easier way to do this. And I said, well, you know, I need to sit down. I need to learn that. I need to get with the computer people and figure it out, but I'm going to stick with the way I have it for a while. And I was receiving feedback from students that when you send things with attachments, they bounce back and so forth. Anyway, when I finally was able to meet with our computer tech person, and he was able to show me how to have it point directly to the PDF so that I could send out this email straight to our students and say, look, here's the weekly. Click here for a direct link. The day I did that, I heard back from several students, gosh, that's just a lot easier. It's one click, not two clicks. And I went to the administrator, and I said, you know, you were absolutely right. I'm glad I took the time to figure out how to do that and how to make it work better. And so that kind of taught me that that I don't think any person knows everything there is to know about computers, but I certainly don't. And it helped with the efficiency of the delivery of the newsletter.
Thank you.
We're done. At this point, we'll turn to Alderman Zaffron for an additional question.
Thank you.
And, sorry, the first respondent will be Ms. Lavelle.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Well, actually, none of you have run in one of these cycles, and for those who have run, you will recognize this question. I cannot claim authorship of it. This is a two-part question, and I'm going to sort of pose a quandary, but the first part I stole from The Independent, and they ask this in every single election cycle. The question is, and this is my favorite, and it's one we all struggle over, so I imagine that you all will as well. Identify a principled stand you might be willing to take if appointed that you suspect might cost you some popularity points with voters. That's the first part. The second part is, I'm going to quote my colleague Mark Chilton, who said, the Board of Aldermen has to decide where roads go and how to collect garbage. There is no role for an ideologue in making these decisions. So if you have an affirmative response to the first part of that question, where in your view does principle end and ideology begin?
We'll give you a few seconds to let that one settle in. Ms. Lavelle.
Well, I think being appointed to the Board of Aldermen, something that will definitely become before the board shortly, if not in the near future, will be with the new annexation area and how we want to grow in the annexation area in terms of commercial growth. And I know on the northern planning, the northern plan, that there are plans for commercial development, different zones for mixed use, residential use, and so on. And so I know there will come a time when the aldermen will have to sit in these seats and make hard decisions about where commercial developments will be and where they will not be. And in particular in that area, which is a sensitive one, with the homeowners having just been annexed and living out in that area because they chose to live away from town. There may very well come a time when the aldermen need to sit here and make a hard decision about just where exactly commercial development, how far out into that area it will go. And that'll be a decision the aldermen have to make and have to consider upsetting a large portion of the residents, the newly annexed area, but yet balancing the need for economic growth and looking after the long-term financial stability of Carrboro as it progresses both geographically and hoping to help it do so economically.
Mr. Merrill.
I think that at first a major issue that might come up is how we're going to deal with the sustained growth of Carrboro, but at the same time keep it an affordable place for people of lower income to live. And I anticipate that there might be some unpopularity with the way that I would approach it, only because I believe that it might slow down the process of Carrboro's plan to grow both economically and also in the downtown development area. I think there are ways to do it in a paced, responsible manner that fiscally will keep us in a more secure position. And I think that might end up being a bone of contention, not only amongst some people within the community, but also people on the board. And if that is the case, I intend to work as a team with the aldermen and to make sure that we come to some kind of agreement as to how we might be able to meet those objectives. Because ultimately, I want to keep Carrboro a place that is diverse both racially and economically. And I think that there has been some places, such as Chapel Hill, for example, where you've seen the trend where there has been a flight of minority groups. And here, I don't want to see that, even though we're starting to see indications of it. However, in conclusion, I think that might end up being somewhere where I might have some disagreements with people's idea and their plans for the future of Carrboro. And yet, at the same time, I do plan to work with them, both the citizenry and the aldermen, to come to a good result.
An issue that continues to be before us in North Carolina is extending full marital rights to partners of gays and lesbians, bisexuals, and so on. And so, first of all, I want to say that I take a very strong stand in favor of extension of those rights. I'm not concerned about the gender of the two partners in the relationship. I'm primarily interested in the commitment. The commitment, regardless of gender, is something that benefits the community and will continue to benefit the community. And then the second part of the question about principle and ideology, I take the stand based on principles that have been developed in this country for over 200 years, and that derived from the experience that the founders and the authors of the Constitution had previously to relieve us from being burdened by abstract ideas, to appreciate those ideas when they are matters of faith, but at the same time to primarily make our decisions on the basis of the consideration of the information, A, and B, I think primarily how we want to be appreciated by others. We therefore extend the respect in return.
Well, it's an interesting question, especially coming after Jackie's, because it really gets to the heart of sort of being responsive to constituents, but sometimes that comes up against taking unpopular stands, and that's obviously where the rubber meets the road a lot of times. The one that comes to mind to me that's sort of on the horizon is how Carrboro is going to deal with the possibility of there being a homeless shelter downtown, and that's going to be a very difficult decision whichever way the board, the majority of the board, decides to go, if it comes to the board, which it looks highly likely that will. And but I'm not sure, you know, I have limited knowledge of all the issues of it, and I'm sure I'm ready to take a stand, but I think either way it's going to upset a large population of the town. So, but that's the one that strikes me.
Thank you.
Okay. For the next question, we'll turn to Alderman Brown, and the first respondent will be David Beck.
I'm going to ask you a two-part question very quickly, though. List the top three characteristics needed for good leadership and why.
Okay. let's see. Ability to listen, ability to communicate, and principle, and basically knowing your own principles. Is that the whole question?
And why?
Oh, why? I'm sorry. Well, ability to listen, because I think you clearly need to be able to know, get it, and be able to gather as much information as you can, and listen to other people's perspectives, and learn and continue to learn as much as you can in trying to make an informed decision. And then I think, and then maybe I would add in, I don't know, no, I'm thinking I should have said decisiveness of one of those three, but the but since I said communicate, I think it's very important to be able to express where you're coming from in a way that makes people comfortable with where you're coming from, even if they don't necessarily agree with you. And I think that's very important, particularly as the annexed areas become part of town, and trying to at least make sure we have open lines of communication. And then I think the principled stand sort of comes somewhat, maybe that's where the decisiveness comes in, but so that people trust where you're coming from, even if they don't agree with you, and understand there's some core thoughtful decision-making process and that you're basing your decisions on.
I would agree with David. I think that perhaps the number one quality of a good leader is to be a listener. I think that's just extremely important. And it ties in with what I think is a second priority, which is to be a visionary, because a leader has to be able to hear, listen, and then take that to another level and have the vision for the group that they're leading. And then I think third is a good leader has to be a team leader and has to listen to the pros and cons of every issue and every argument from the constituents or the people he or she works with, and take that group and lead it toward the vision that they all are seeking.
Mr. Merrill.
I would say sensitivity, open-mindedness, and flexibility. Reason I say that is I think as a leader in the community, you have to be sensitive to not only the needs but also you know, the desires and also the concerns of the people that you're representing. I think open-mindedness is essential only because you have to be open to new ideas, you have to be open to new resolutions to issues, and even have to be flexible. And I think those two are interrelated. You have to be flexible in that you have to be willing to change, because I think as new information comes about and new situations and new events come about, it's very important for somebody who is leading the community to change their mind, be open to other people's ideas, and to be flexible and to change and make a decision that maybe they weren't planning on making from the onset.
Not necessarily in order of priority, and sounding very much like the other folks here. Vision, one, a sense of direction. Where do we want to go? And in what context? Flexibility, absolutely, and I include listening in that. Flexibility covers a lot of things. But it's the difference between principle and ideology is a willingness to take things into consideration and to adjust a vision to have a vision encompass new information as it comes along. And then finally, tenacity. On the one hand, flexibility is important. You can go too far, though, and so it's important to ground your vision with principles and values and be willing to stick to them and know that sometimes in a vote situation that you may end up in the minority.
All right. Our next question will come from Alderman Herrera.
All right. Good evening. And talking a lot about leadership, step up the heat here and go to good governance. On your own words, identify the main elements of good governance, elaborate in the elements you really feel passionate about it, and that you expect to bring to this board if appointed.
And we'll start where we left off, Mr. Carnahan.
In addition to the things previously mentioned, a willingness to gather information, to take the time, and to learn, particularly in a controversial situation, the full spectrum of ideas, to develop choices, an appreciation of staff and capacity and willingness to work in a really affirmative way with the employees of the town. Knowing that we represent the folks in the community, wanting to get as much input as possible, and when it seems as though we're still not getting it, then continuing to look for ways to get feedback from citizens as we move along, making changes, getting feedback before the changes, getting the information out. So communication.
I guess there some of the main elements of good government that I came up with, and I think it varies a little bit for staff versus the board and how the board deals with staff, but the good government needs to be responsive to its constituents, should be efficient, should be well-informed, should be forward-thinking or be planning ahead, and very communicative, so everyone is, or as many people as possible, are know what's going on. And I guess what I'm sort of passionate about in some ways is, as I keep thinking about it, is the communication element of it. I just think that that's really important to keep the town, get as many people engaged or up to speed on town issues. I think it's very hard to, the municipal government issues to me seem very complex and down in the details, and it's often hard to translate that out to sort of citizens who aren't in the mix as closely as folks who are making policy or implementing it. And I think that's, in some ways, that's what I bring to it. I think I'm a pretty good networker in my job, and I think maybe that would be a benefit to the community if I were to serve on the board.
Okay, elements of good governance, the qualities that we just talked about with the leader, those, of course, would be qualities that aldermen and staff should have or strive for in terms of leading a community. I also, as I said in my application, you know, any person coming into this position, just as you all do, needs to be familiar with all of the paperwork, all of the minutes, all the agendas, all the people coming before them. Our citizens deserve the respect of aldermen that have studied the issues and that can ask well-informed questions of them. Good governance means being available to the citizens and being available to all citizens. You know, our diverse population, figuring out ways to reach out to everyone in the community and making sure that they're able to hear what we're bringing to them in a way that works for them. We have to be accessible to the community, and that means, you know, also physically, you know, go out and hear what they have to say. We have to, I think that it behooves us to have good visibility, and especially as we welcome the new folks in the transition area, the annexation area. I think something I would bring to the board would be having experience both as a staff member and as a volunteer, having worked for the City of Durham in Recreation Administration for many years, and having that viewpoint, and then also having sat on a couple of boards in Durham for many years, including the Durham Open Space and Trails Commission. I think that I have a good understanding of both sides of various issues, and I think that would help me in good governance.
I think good governance is always keeping a basically having always keeping into consideration the big picture, and also being responsive to your community. And I believe that in being responsive to the community, a good government is also going to take into consideration all the different needs and all of the different concerns. And I think that Carrboro does that on the whole. And I think that I would be able to contribute to that, not only in being, like I agree with Ms. Lavelle here, in saying that being exposed to the community and basically having getting their ideas and their feedback and always being available to them and taking in their ideas. And essentially, I believe that the experience that I had had in with the human services community in the 4 years that I've been on there has given me an understanding of some of the services that are available to the people of Carrboro and in Chapel Hill, and also some of the resources that I think can help them in easing some of their maybe their suffering, or maybe any of the concerns that they might have. I understand the resources that are available to them, and I think I can bring that to the board, and I certainly hope to do that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Merrill. Our final question will come from Alderman Haven O'Donnell, and we'll start with you again, Mr. Merrill.
The Board of Aldermen are interested in community building and recognizes the increased potential of a cultural divide among Carrboro citizens. How would you define the cultural divide, and what recommendations would you make to address this concern and foster community building?
Well, the cultural divide that I think we're seeing is we have a large contingent of people from a Latino background that are essentially disenfranchised from the political process. They spend their money here. They contribute to the community. They give their labor here. Their children go to the schools, and yet at the same time, we're unable to really get them involved in the governance of the town. And I think that is a cultural divide in a way, only because we see a large contingent of people who are dealing with crime issues and drugs and domestic violence issues who really are unable to voice those particular opinions. And I think that a forum has to be developed where they can comfortably say those concerns to the community. Also, we're seeing a flight of African Americans as well from Carrboro, and I think that has a lot to do with the expense here. This is an expensive place to live, and it's becoming more and more expensive. And so long as we continue this policy of increasing taxes and taking on more debt, we're going to see an increased amount of people of all different economic and racial strata leaving Carrboro. So what are we going to end up? We might end up with a clone of Chapel Hill, which I view is, essentially a predominantly white, upper-middle-class community. I don't want to see that. I want to see Carrboro be diverse. And it's not going to happen if we increase taxes as we are. I'm telling you, I have a house that's worth, I think it's worth a considerable amount of money. I had to save a long, long time to get it. And as a result, my mortgage payment is going up every single year. I'm not made of money. And I certainly want Carrboro to be sensitive not only to those people like myself, but also people who want to get on the ground floor and get a home.
Thanks. Mr. Carnahan.
I want to say first that I do see that there are a number of different divides in the community. But at the same time, I think one of the great features of this town is the fact that I think we managed to meet across those divides quite a bit. I am, like Mr. Merrill, very concerned about worsening the divide by having the affordability of our town, the cost of living, the cost of taxes continue to rise, and there be pressures on people to sell their property because they can't afford it. So that's a primary, I think, way to address that. But the second one, I noticed, for instance, being on an advisory board. Advisory boards are great ideas. It's a great way to get involvement from citizens. But I notice, for the most part, who sits on advisory boards are folks who've got a little bit of discretionary time. And that doesn't necessarily include people who have really heavy family responsibilities or professional responsibilities or have to work two jobs in order to support families. And so I am interested in looking for other ways to take this format that we have, the advisory board format, and figure out ways to involve other populations in our community who cannot be involved in this kind of participation.
I think, since the question is framed this way, I do think, as James says, it's important to recognize how much there is cultural sort of diversity and integration in town. But to some of the divides that come to my mind are sort of older Carrboro citizens and younger ones. I think a lot of folks who have been in Carrboro for more than one generation, I think there's some divide there. Certainly between sort of the downtown, more established neighborhoods and then northern, the Annex neighborhood and Lake Hogan Farms and some of those, I think there's a divide that we need to work on. And then sort of the minority populations, there's certainly a divide there. Somebody mentioned it in one of the news articles or applications, but the fact that we have 12 applicants and none of them are African American, it, to me, is unfortunate. And in as much time as I spend at Weaver Street Market, you don't see a lot of African American or Hispanic families up there. And I mean, there's a lot of diversity, but there's also this sort of pronounced lack of participation or using, what is, I think, is a great space. And I think that's just something that struck me over the years. And I also I think there are lots of ways we can work on that. I also just want to say affordability is clearly a huge issue. But I just think to talk about it only in terms of tax increases is not fair. I did serve on the budget review committee at one point, and it was clear that Carver has a tight budget. And I think if you're going to talk about not increasing taxes, you need to also be talking about how you're going to stop that, because what budget changes are you going to make? I think it's too simplistic to just say if we keep increasing taxes, we're going to not be in an affordable town. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Beck. Ms. Lavelle.
I agree with Mr. Merrill's observation about the Hispanic community. Randy's question asked about, what kind of cultural divides do we have? Well, Mr. Beck said it, we have cultural divides among races, among ages, among settled citizens, among new citizens, among, lower income citizens. And so there are a lot of considerations here. But I think that ultimately, many of these divisions, certainly the divisions of income, rely on the financial stability of the town. And Mr. Merrill talked about property taxes, so Mr. Beck. I think it's real important, as you all obviously do, to look at the economic picture of Carrboro and to figure out how we can be in a better financial situation without raising property taxes. In Durham, 50% of the tax base comes from commercial business, and here it's 12 to 15% or something like that, and I know that you've recently employed this consultant that's going to look at ways to work on the economic picture of Carrboro and work on ways to try to work on our financial picture. Other ways of that we're already doing and that we need to continue to work on of increasing affordability for various cultures are working with groups like the Land Trust, working with groups like Empowerment, working with, you know, local, state, federal funding agencies that can help us with housing issues, and, you know, working with developers on set-asides. You know, we don't have inclusionary zoning, but working with them on ways to set aside housing for, you know, affordable housing for citizens.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's see. That was everybody, right, for that last question? I think we're done with this round of questioning. We're going to break for just a couple of minutes here while we change to our next panel. And thank you all for coming. You're welcome to stay and listen to the rest of the proceedings. Yes. You're also welcome
to don't have to leave the room, do we?
No, you don't. But you can go and get a snack.
but no making faces, okay?
I got to stand up.
So we have to, we didn't tell you that's your job. You get another one in a minute.
come back to order here.
Very conservative and very liberal.
Thank you all for joining us. This is the January 19, 2006 meeting of the Carborough Board of Aldermen. And we are in the process of interviewing candidates for appointment to the Carborough Board of Aldermen. This is our second panel. Catherine Devine, Stephen Klosick, Dan Coleman, and Katrina Ryan are our panelists tonight. This is a special meeting. A rebroadcast of this meeting can be watched on our website. It should be up in a few days at www.townofcarborough.com. .com will get you there. .org will get you there. I bet .net would get you there. I guarantee you .com will get you there. We're also being broadcast live tonight over WCOM radio. Thank you for doing that, WCOM, and David Bellin, who is covering this event in the next room, who I understand was identified in the email that I received about this as the WCOM senior government analyst. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on that promotion, David. Anyway, with that, what we're going to do is move down the line. We're going to start with Alderman Gist, who's going to ask a question. The first question will go, this was set up at random, will go to Katrina Ryan, and then we'll scroll back over to Catherine Devine and go down the line. We're going to rotate each time with a different person answering each question first. The first person in each round will be the last person from the previous round. And if you would give me the chance to just mention your name so radio listeners can follow who's speaking. The first question will be from Alderman Jackie Gist.
Thank you for being here this evening. My question is, will you please tell us about a time when you changed your stance on an issue, either in a professional setting or a community setting, based on feedback from coworkers or members of the community?
Ms. Ryan.
God, I change my mind so often, it's not even funny. I imagine probably the most relevant time, I actually got talked out of being a death penalty proponent as a younger woman. I grew up in Texas, a very conservative state, and grew up, as most Texans do, supporting the death penalty. And I distinctly remember the conversation, and it didn't have anything to do with what is right or what is wrong and whether or not you deserve. I was gung-ho that there were people who did such horrible things that they deserved to die. And that's a tough thing to talk somebody out of, quite frankly. But the particular conversation with, it was my minister and a couple of kids in my youth group were the ones who explained to me that even if you believe that somebody has a right, could you be the one to pull the switch? Could you be the one to actually kill them? And when you realize that you actually have to be that there is someone somewhere who you are putting in the position of taking a human life, I wouldn't say that I changed my mind that day, but I would say that it was that 13-year-old who persuaded me that in things that even seem moral absolute, that there's two opinions.
Thank you.
Thanks. Ms. Devine.
I have changed my mind two times on one issue that affects us, that's kind of prominent lately. It has to do with the Carolina North project. And so I'm not going to do too much talking about Carolina North except to say that the light rail component of Carolina North has niggled me since June. I started off thinking that I don't support light rail in connection with that project. And I said so in several forums and to several different reporters. And in the street and in talking with people in the street, I heard, well, you're the only one who doesn't support that. So I changed my mind. And I said, oh, well, therefore I should, because everybody else wants it. And I lasted about 5 days thinking, but not saying, that I do support light rail for reasons having to do with the environment and public transportation and its basic sexiness. But I changed my mind again. I don't support light rail.
Thanks. Mr. Klosik.
For me, the issue was gun control. I remember in high school specifically thinking, well, this country needs more gun control, until it was pointed out to me by a very liberal high school teacher and one of my good friends that, well, it's in the Bill of Rights that everybody has the right to bear arms, and you sort of have to deal with that as being in the Constitution, and if you want to start fiddling with that, then some of the other rights that are in the Bill of Rights could be taken away from you as well. And I still specifically remember having that memory of changing my mind and saying, you know, it may be something that you may not be for, but it protects us in some way.
Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, this brings up something that's actually been on my mind reading the news the last couple weeks, which is that for a long time I've been very critical of the university's growth plans and the way they've been, particularly on Carolina North, handling that. And I think it was sometime in November, maybe October, Chancellor Meeser had a guest column in the paper in which he talked about the sustainability report the university had just published and the things that they were accomplishing along those lines, green roofs and energy work and using solar energy and a lot of different things. And I went and read that report, and it was really very impressive, and it made me think that there's a lot of good work going on in the university, that if the university led with some of those ideas in terms of Carolina North, then we'd get a lot further with the community than we have in the past. And so in the last week when I read about the new process that they're proposing for Carolina North, I was, I guess, I don't know if optimistic is too strong a word, but I was certainly felt a lot more open and, you know, had the thought that that might be able to develop in a more positive way than past efforts.
Okay. Our next question will come from Alderman Zaffron, and we'll begin with you, Mr. Coleman.
Thanks. Thank you all for being here. For those of you who have run for office, you will recognize the first part of this question, which I have stolen. This is a two-part question, and I'm essentially posing a quandary and asking you to work through it, and it goes like this. The first one is, again, this is from the Independent, by the way. I'll give credit. Thank you, Kirk, for emailing me the exact wording. One, identify a principled stand you might be willing to take if elected, or appointed in this case, that you suspect might cost you some popularity points with voters. The second part is quoting my colleague Mark Chilton, where he said, quote, "The Board of Aldermen has to decide where roads go and how to collect garbage. There is no role for an ideologue in making these decisions." If you have an affirmative response to the first part of that question, where, in your view, does principle end and ideology begin?
Mr. Coleman.
Okay. Good question. I guess the thing that comes to mind for me immediately, and it's tough to start your move toward government with putting out an idea you have that might be unpopular, but I'm actually someone who believes in taxes. I think taxes are how we pay for the social goods that we need to sustain our community. And that has nothing to do with the question of our tax rate and how we can diversify it and, you know, try and keep it from raising too quickly. But the simple fact is that, you know, I have a personal belief that we are part of a collective group called the citizens or the people of Carrboro, and that through government is how we decide what our needs are, and through taxes is how we pay for them. And I know by talking about taxes in that way, that will be unpopular with some people who are, in fact, you know, just think taxes are bad. The goal of government is to make them low. I don't think so. I think taxes are investments we make in our own well-being and that of our community.
Ms. Ryan.
I thought I was last on this round.
We keep going the same way around the table.
Oh, okay. I thought I was first.
Sorry.
Principled stand.
If you'd like just a moment to think about it.
Yeah, I was not prepared.
Give yourself a moment. Tell me when you're ready.
Could Alex read part two while we're waiting?
Yeah.
Why don't you read the
sure.
whole?
Yeah. Let me just go ahead and read it again because it's a bit of a poser.
Sure.
The first part is to identify a principled stand you might be willing to take if elected or appointed in this case that you suspect might cost you some popularity points with voters. That's part one. Part two, which is sort of the flip side of it, is a quote from Mark, where he said, the Board of Aldermen has to decide where roads go and how to collect garbage. There is no role for an ideologue in making those decisions. So here's wrapping the whole thing together. If you have an affirmative response to one, where in your view does principle end and ideology begin?
Can I have my last 30 seconds to answer the second?
I was waiting for that.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks. To me, that's a pretty straightforward question. But, you know, an ideologue is when you let an idea drive how you view things, sort of irrespective of particulars of implementation strategies, of circumstances, those sorts of things. So I think you have a principle, and then you put the principle into play. And to me, it also conveys a sense of, you know, a softer touch and a heavier touch in terms of how just one approaches things.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ryan. If you're ready.
Okay, I'm going to answer it backwards.
That's your prerogative.
To me, the difference between an ideologue and I would hope to never become an ideologue, but I would always hope to be an idealist. In that. I think there are certain common principles that are almost unanimous in people who would choose to live in Carrboro. And I don't think I'm going to take Dan's answer because it's something worth talking about in this community. I don't think that the people who choose to move to Carrboro are a low tax. This is not people who move here for a low tax crowd. They look for a certain standard of service and a certain level of compassion from the government and the community. But the idealistic stand that I'm very firm on is that people are struggling economically right now. There's downsizing and there's an awful lot of people living paycheck to paycheck, and it is absolutely a matter of public trust to be a good steward of tax dollars. And if that means that one year we can't afford the music festival because it costs too much in overtime with police, if that comes against a tax increase because we haven't done our job increasing the commercial tax base, then we have to take that responsibility. And so that would be the principled stand I would take. But to me, that is being an idealist, saying I want people to be able to pay for their prescription drugs and not have to worry about a $400 increase in their taxes.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Devine.
Sir. True confessions. I told the Independent, that was the last question on their questionnaire, that I was disappointed that the university had chosen to close Horace Williams Airport. And at the time, it was just enough time, but there's not enough time anymore to join that committee, which I hope to do, and see if they can't reverse that decision and keep Horace Williams Airport open. Now, with regard to principles versus ideology, you know, we're a community full of lofty thinkers. You know, ideology prevails most of the time in this room and on the street. However, principle has to prevail when we don't have the time and we don't have the money to promote lofty ideas. If you're going to talk about streets and garbage collection as an example, street resurfacing has to go where it's needed the most first and where we can afford it the most easily. Garbage collection, from a principled stance, and not, you know, I mean, I would, as an ideologist, I wish garbage would disappear. It does not. I think as a pay-as-you-throw strategy will serve us best in the long run. We're not discussing that tonight, but it's an example of principled thinking versus ideology.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Klasik.
I have to answer no to number one. I hope I'm wise enough to realize that anybody with a cogent argument can talk me out of any principle that I think I've got. I know I'm not smart enough to know everything in the world, so I got to listen to others. And my character is that I want to make sure I get things done, so I think I'd lean towards, well, if we need to conduct some town business, then let's do it, and I can give up these beliefs that I've got just for the advancement of the town business.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Our next question will come from Alderman Joel Brown, and we'll start with you, Mr. Klasik.
List the top three characteristics needed for good leadership and why. It's a two-part question.
But only a moment, so.
I'd say number one is the ability to communicate. Number two is awareness of one's own weaknesses and strengths. And number three is a certain charisma. In order to get your point across, which is closely related to number one. I think leadership is, you have to communicate because you need to know what those who are following you, what direction they want to go, and what would benefit them. And you need to communicate your ideals to them and explain to them, well, this is the policies that we're going to follow so that we can achieve those goals that the community has. Strengths and weaknesses, it's so you can find your, you can take advantage of what works best for you, but you know what areas you need help on, and you can get that from your coworkers and other people in the community. And then I think charisma, just so that people will have trust in you and are willing to listen to what you say and realize that you're working for their benefit in the end.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Coleman. Okay.
You specified three qualities?
Three qualities.
Okay.
Although you don't have to put
that's
three
how many
qualities.
I have, so.
And tell why you select those qualities. I'm sorry.
The first I would say is what I would call active listening. And by that I mean not just an ability to listen, but to listen in a way that draws out the best thinking and gets to the questions and the blocks that other people have in thinking about the issue. The second I would look at is sort of a combination of ability to synthesize and to analyze. So to put together the ideas you get from others and from yourself and from research, whatever, and find ways to work that all together and glean the best and to analyze it into something that's a coherent position. And then the third would be along the lines of what Stephen said, which is the ability to communicate, to articulate that result of that analysis in a way that expresses the process you've gone through as well as the result. And that, again, the communication at the end, just like the listening at the beginning, needs to be interactive so that the people getting the message understand, can reflect back to you on it, and you can respond to that reflection. Thanks.
Ms. Ryan.
I think you could go through a list of 50 characteristics that are desirable in a leader. The two that seem the rarest to me are what Ann Richards once called, Ann Richards said to me that the hardest part of being in public service is that you give up the right to dislike those that you dislike. And the ability to do that and thus be fair to those with whom you disagree is a rare gift amongst human beings. And secondly, and this is almost, you know, to use a poker strategy, is sort of know, you know, when to hold and when to fold, when to take a stand and work on being persuasive in persuading someone to see your vision of an issue, or when to perhaps yield for the greater good, to see the big picture and fold your cards on one issue in order to achieve something that perhaps is more important in the long run. And I think those two things are extraordinarily rare and difficult to find, and I don't claim to have them, but I aspire to them.
All right. Thanks very much. Sorry, just a moment. Ms. Devine.
Okay, in no particular order, patience, humility, and vision are the three top qualifications for good leadership. Patience because, and this is my conscience speaking to me, being my guide, I'm a rather impatient leader. You know, when I think I have the right idea and I know the right thing to do, I have a tendency, just so I'm warning you, you know, to want things to happen quickly. And in studying all of my notes for this interview, including the Vision 2020 document, that was a huge revelation, almost an epiphany today, when I looked at that and said, look at what we've done. Vision 2020. More on this later. Let's go to humility now. I have to be humble enough. A good leader has to be humble enough to admit to not understanding what the objective is or what the issue really means, and to communicate that as expressively as the obvious, you know, happy willingness to communicate total confidence in their thinking. You have to be humble enough to say, I don't know. Then on top of that comes vision. Vision doesn't contradict patience, but supports it. If you're going to stick with your, you've got to have a vision to even stick with the problem at all. If you're going to lead this thing in collaboration with six others or any number of others through to a sustainable conclusion, you have to have a vision the whole time. And back to humility, you have to understand what that vision is. Back to patience, you have to be willing to wait for it.
Thank you, everybody.
Our next question will be from Alderman Herrera, and we'll ask Ms. Devine to answer the question first.
Okay. We're moving to a different level, to municipal governance. On your own words, identify the main elements of good governance. Elaborate on the elements that you really feel passionate about it and that you expect bringing to this board if appointed.
Good governance is mostly about good communication. A two-way street of communication. good governance is not secondarily but equally comprised of an inclusionary attitude. We have a lot to do with regard to communication in this town. The questionnaire that all of us, all 12 of us, completed asks how we would advance inclusionary governance. And I hope and believe that that's what you're angling at. You know, and all of us pretty redundantly said, well, everybody needs to know what's going on. Well, how do we let them know what's going on? I don't have a solution for this or a strategy for communicating to all of our citizens just what is going on at any given time. We do have a pretty good system for communicating with all the stakeholders at any given time. If we're looking at a neighborhood or a collection strategy or any, we know who's going to be affected before we make decisions. And I've watched this for 8 years, and we do know that. But I would like to see a more inclusion. I would like to see more participation, which would be one way of measuring our success at inclusionary governance.
Thank you. Mr. Classic.
John, I think the key in my mind is fairness, treating everybody in the community fairly. And it doesn't matter whether they're property owners or students who are living in the apartments or recent immigrants or folks who are just visiting. Everybody needs to be treated fairly when considering any kind of town ordinances or policies. I think if you do that, then everybody feels that they've gotten a fair shake from the Board of Aldermen or whatever representatives. Doesn't matter what, if it's this town or any other town. And I think that's all that people can really ask for, is to be heard and to have their opinions considered and to be counted equal among everybody that has a stake in the town.
Thanks, Steve. Mr. Coleman.
Democracy, as we all know, means government by the people. And I think it has to be a dilemma for anyone who sits in a body of seven people where you get to make decisions to understand those decisions as being government by the people. And I think the key to achieving that has two elements. One is the element of inclusion, and one is the element of participation. And in my questionnaire on question number 6, I put out a number of ideas on how to create a more participatory democracy in Carrboro. And I'm not going to repeat those now, but they're there, and I assume you all have read them. And also in the questionnaire, on question number 4, I laid out several ideas on more inclusive government as well. And those two are very tied together, and I think those are things that I've been concerned about throughout my political life, is both inclusion and participation and what participatory democracy means and what the whole idea of self-governance might mean. And I've done a lot of work researching different models of that, and I wrote a book that discussed that in great detail. And I hope that that orientation is something that if I bring something to this board, that that will be of benefit to Carrboro.
Thanks. Ms. Ryan.
I think of every place that I've lived, Carrboro is sort of a unique opportunity to take the next step in, you know, diversity thinking. I think in this town, in the leaders that I've seen and every one of you that I've met and have spent time with, absolutely everyone makes an attempt to walk in the other guy's shoes. And I think that is an incredible step forward, and it's the next step beyond sort of identity politics, beyond making sure that we have one of these and one of those, and however we start breaking ourselves down. I think we're now at an opportunity here to, like, instead of going, you know, aiming for, you know, racial or sexual or whatever, tolerance, that we really get to a point where harmony, we really can now bridge But that requires, and this to me seems, whether it is true or not, there is a solid minority, a large minority, who don't feel that their voice is heard in town. And it's everyone from the people who've lived here for 40 years who are scared to death of the changes that are happening and of, you know, retiring and being able to pay, you know, their taxes when they hear that they're twice as much as they are in Boone or Alamance or any other, you know, sort of small town. But I think the thing that I bring in this is that I think you get the best government when the full spectrum of ideas is discussed. When I think Alex and I sitting having a discussion, you're going to hear two vastly different views, but everything in between can be considered and negotiated, and you come up with something that is by the consent of everyone, not just, you know, those who agree.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Our final question is going to be from Alderman Haven O'Donnell.
Wading through the last set of panelists. I appreciate you doing that.
The refreshments were great.
The Board of Aldermen are interested in community building, and we recognize the increased potential of a cultural divide among Carrboro citizens. How would you define, and what recommendations would you make to address this concern and foster community building?
Katrina Ryan.
I don't really think it. I think to call it a cultural divide is it's a bit inappropriate. But I do think that there is, I call it the zip code divide. If you go to 27516, you've got 80-something percent that are families raising children. And then the 27510 tends to be either the empty nesters or students or people who are attracted to Carrboro for the cultural amenities. And that is what I perceive to be the divide, is those who are here for the sort of schools and the, you know, and those who are here for groovy Carrboro. And I think that both of those can be accommodated very easily. I just honestly think that those, you know, in the northern zip code feel that it's that their viewpoint isn't heard. That, you know, there's an awful lot of people in Lake Hogan Farms who would like it if the bus came up to them so their kids could come down to the music festival, et cetera. And I think that even if we make it geographically, Carrboro geographically more connected, you end up with less of a cultural divide. If we're around each other more. The biggest problem that I saw in all the annexation hearings was that the people up in the annexation area didn't go downtown much, and the people downtown didn't go up to the annexation. So that fundamental breakdown in communication, I'd like to see, you know, a festival or a park in the north end of town to bring community together up on that end of town and start to bridge it in that way. I think a commercial center, if we could get a Trader Joe's in the Windmore, I'd be thrilled silly.
Sounds good.
But that sort of community building, bring it up to what is substantially a suburban area where people stand on the corner and talk. I think if you start to bridge it and make it a little more alike, that the quote cultural divide just dissolves.
Thanks. Ms. Devine.
Already. There is a cultural divide that we have to acknowledge in this town. We talk about community, and I think that each of us in this room has a certain mindset about community that's the usual suspects. It's our friends. The broader spectrum of Carrboro's population it's diverse, and, you know, I have an attitude about diversity and what that word means, but we do have outreach to do. With regard to Latino outreach, there is a cultural divide. I want to partner with John Herrera on Latino outreach, especially with regard to his proposed not an advisory board, but an ad hoc committee to study that. and study that population and find out how we can much more effectively engage them in this community on a participatory level, which does not exist right now. The other divide that we have to face is in the annexation. And I have a strategy in mind for that. We do have new neighbors to meet and to engage in what exists already as the Carrboro community. I propose soon, not late, but soon. January 31st is the day that these people become citizens of Carrboro. There should be a celebration of that, not an apology for it, but a celebration. I propose a welcome reception slash celebration for all neighbors in Carrboro, and mainly inviting our new neighbors from the north to come to Century Hall and say hello, get to know each other. Secondarily, I propose a new citizens orientation to take place in this room, to invite all of our new neighbors to get on our advisory boards. Am I out of time? To get on our advisory boards and to find out who's who gets what done. And finally, I have a really radical idea, and I'm going to take 5 extra seconds. I hear a wish on the part of our new neighbors for a meeting place in the northern part of town. I propose that when the new fire substation is designed, that we tack on a large enough meeting room to accommodate community gatherings for bunches of people in that area.
Thanks for bringing that up. Mr. Klosik.
Randy, would you mind repeating the question for
Absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely.
Okay. The Board of Aldermen are interested in community building and recognizes the increased potential of a cultural divide amongst Carrboro citizens. How would you define and what recommendations would you make to address this concern and foster community building?
I'm going to have to take the opposing view here and say that cultural divides are natural outgrowth of human nature. And if you get caught up in trying to build community, you're just going to end up banging your head against the wall because you're trying to change human nature. And I think there's probably better and more important things for the Board of Aldermen to look at than trying to change the way people think just so that you can establish a community.
All right. And Mr. Coleman.
Well, I also don't think there's a cultural divide. I think there are differences, and there will always be differences. And the question is, how do you keep differences from becoming divides? And then what do you do if they do become divides? And I really agree with Katrina on this question. And the reason I say agree with Katrina is because Katrina and I have differences, just like she said she has with Alex. And I raised some critical questions of her during her campaign. But I consider Katrina part of my community because of the fact that she ran, not just that she ran, but through the process of her running, we got to know each other. I know what she's about. I can communicate with her. And so I think the answer to this is really the same as the answer to the good governance question. And it also has to do with this idea of connectivity. We talk a lot about connectivity in Carrboro, and usually we mean roads. But there's the other kinds of connectivity that bring people together. And I think Catherine has some good ideas for that, Katrina did, in terms of making sure that the amenities that some of us value are accessible to all, and creating opportunities to bring the community together, to bring parts of the community together so we interact on things that we enjoy or are concerned with or that we share in common. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was everybody, right? At this point, we'll take a break for about 3 minutes while we change out to our next panel. I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight and sharing your thoughts with us. Y'all are welcome to stay and listen to the rest of the proceedings or go, either one.
But was it smoke or looking more like 5 minutes?
Yeah, because we didn't take a very long break.
It causes Dave Bellin a lot of hardship. Solid minutes, but if you on the radio. She just moments ago said that we should start with that. That's okay. It's going to be like church, like you suggested.
We're going to come back to order now. Welcome back. This is the January 19th, 2006 special meeting of the Board of Aldermen. We are hearing from applicants to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen for appointment to the one vacant seat on our board. We've already interviewed two panels of four candidates earlier tonight. This is the final panel of four candidates. Thank you all for coming out tonight. And the panelists that we're going to be hearing from are, and actually, can I get you to say your name?
Absolutely.
Panelist number one.
Its first name is Alina Kalamanis.
Alina Kalamanis.
Very good.
That's great. Thank you. Alina Kalamanis, David Marshall, Bob Kirshner, and Albert Vickers. The way we're going to do this is we're going to have each of the members of the Board of Aldermen ask a question, and then the four of y'all will respond. We'll start with a different person each time. The sequence was selected at random before this meeting. The first question is going to come from Alderman Jackie Gist. You'll have two. Then the first respondent will be Mr. Vickers, and then we'll jump down to Ms. Kalamanis and move down the line. And so Mr. Kirshner will give the last answer to the first question, and we'll also start again with Mr. Kirshner in the next round. So the second question, Mr. Kirshner will answer first, and then we'll go to Mr. Vickers and back around. So, when I flash you this yellow card, that indicates that you have 30 seconds left, and we appreciate your respecting that. So with that, we'll turn to Alderman Gist for our first question.
Thank you all for being here this evening. My question is, can you please tell us about a time when you changed your stance on an issue based on feedback from coworkers or the community? Change your stance on an issue at work or in a community forum based on feedback from coworkers or the community?
Mr. Vickers.
Okay. Well, I'll have to talk about one thing I mentioned in the and the application was I was involved in a Superfund site. And when I went to the site and looked at it, and I was representing the companies who were responsible for the issue. And they were in the position, and I was part of that group. I looked at the community, and they were looking at how was the cheapest way to get out of there and deal with it. I looked at the community. I looked at the issue. I talked to the people in the community. I talked to the personnel involved and said this would be a crime to continue the normal EPA process of working on this site because the site was in the middle of the town, and if they cleaned it up and left it as a hazardous waste site and left it in its present development, it would be an eyesore for the site. So what we did was we talked, and I was convinced that although it was very risky, it hadn't been done, that we should try and make it a redevelopment and redevelop the whole area. And I was able to work with the personnel in the town and convince even the town council, who was half the town council was suing us individually, to go along with the process. It was a very difficult time. It involved a lot of public outreach, a lot of meeting with groups, meeting and getting their concerns and addressing their concerns to get them to look what would the town look like 10 years down the road instead of what the immediate issue was and how we should really change the approach on the site. Currently, the site now has a public library and literacy center and a not-for-profit center. It was decaying housing on the site, which had to change the zoning, and we had to do quite a few other things with EPA to get them to go along. It was a time when I originally approached, like most sites from businesses, manage it to get the least cost to your client. And we changed it, and I think it worked out best for everybody at the end.
Thank you.
Ms. Kalamanis.
I'd like to describe a situation that I had at IBM when we were doing some new product development, and I was convinced that there was some functionality that hadn't been considered that I thought was critical to the product and for its success. And we spent a great deal of time, and we did some additional research. The people presented to me, They did blind customer surveys. They talked to a lot of people. They presented me with the situation and why they felt it wasn't going to be for the amount of extra cost that it was going to require in order to put in this product functionality. And through working together with them and understanding what were the blind study they had done and the needs of the customers and so on, I came around to agreeing with them that the cost-benefit of the new functionality was not something that we should have invested in. So I went with the design that they recommended.
Thank you.
Mr. Marshall.
I was with a team. I was at Duke University getting my master's degree, and I was with a team of students who had been charged by the North Carolina Department of Revenue to come up with a solution of how to increase tax compliance among Hispanics. And one thing that we discovered very early in our project, in our research, was that there was a considerable amount of tax compliance by Hispanics. And I wanted to make sure that we put that very early in the report. And obviously, being Hispanic, I'm emotionally attached to that idea. But somebody took me aside, and the rest of the team was very much against it. But one person particularly took me aside and said, "Listen, we understand that this is something that's very important to you."
Do you have another minute? I'm sorry.
That's okay. But you're going to have to set aside the way you feel about this and look at the larger picture and look at the North Carolina Department of Revenue and see what it is that they're asking for. They're not asking for a political statement. They're not asking for you to get up on a soapbox and try to correct errors in society. What they're asking for is a very simple thing. And there are a number of predicates that needed to be established in the report before you could rationally be able to come up with some of the suggestions that we had come up with. And I was, even though it was hard, I relented. But I think that in the end, it's always best to have that kind of rationality over emotional. Even though your emotions can be charged, I think that there's a room for both.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you. There were several instances that I can think of, but I'm trying to make a nice simple one that I can think of that's not too long ago and fresh in memory here. Serving on a board of directors for a homeowners association. We have a situation where we have common water supply, so we split that bill up equally with all our homeowners. Few homeowners like washing their cars, and so the question came up, is it reasonable to ban car washing altogether because it's a few that's taking resources from many? And quite honestly, though I would like to be able to wash my car in my own home as well, I had to think about what was good for the community as a whole here. However, the decision was made. Actually, I prompted a decision to be made to, well, let's take a survey of all owners of the property and take their feedback and let's see what their feelings were. And the end result was as long as standard normal water conservation was being used, which car washing can be done in a conservative way, that they really didn't see an issue and did not want to be banned from the community. So I was taking input from the membership, from the community, and making the decisions on what their attitude was. Thank you.
All right, thank you. at this point, we'll turn to Alderman Zaffron. The first question will be to you, Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. This is a two-part question. It's a bit of a quandary, so I'll just ask you to follow through it with me. Those of you who have run before will recognize this question. I have stolen it from the Independent, and it is one that all elected officials in this neck of the woods have to answer in every election cycle, and it's one that most struggle with, so I imagine that you will as well. The first part of the question is, identify a principled stand you might be willing to take if elected, or in this case appointed, that you suspect might cost you some popularity points with voters. The second part of the question is, quoting my colleague Mark, quote, the Board of Aldermen has to decide where roads go and how to collect garbage. There is no role for an ideologue in making these decisions. Close quote. If you have an affirmative response to number one, where, in your view, does principle end and ideology begin?
And we'll start with you, Mr. Kirshner.
That's a good question. Thank you very much. Probably, I try to be very, one of the conscious thing I try to approach is what is the, when I'm trying to make policy decisions, is what is the right thing to do? And one of the things I have to be conscious is, do we even have a right to be passing a policy on what we're thinking about? Are we infringing on a property right or a right of an individual? Or do we have, or are we being granted an authority to do, take the action we feel we need to do for the good of the community? It's not always popular having to say, these are the rules. This is what the policy we came up with. I'm sorry, the second part of your question?
The second part of the question was a quote, which is, the Board of Aldermen has to decide where roads go and how to collect garbage. There is no role for an ideologue in making these decisions. And to tie this together, if you have an affirmative response to number one, which was your response, where, in your view, does principle end and ideology begin?
The principal question to that is really, are we overstepping boundary of duty, and are we infringing in a negative way on a property right?
I think that's another 30 seconds if you want to.
I'm fine with
it. Okay, great. Thanks. Mr. Vickers.
Can I have the first part of the question again, just to make sure?
Sure. The first part of the question, which, again, I cannot claim ownership of. I stole it from the Independent Weekly. It asks it of all candidates. It's identify a principled stand you might be willing to take if elected or appointed in this case that you suspect might cost you some popularity points with voters.
Well, I believe in principle that responsibility of a town council or an alderman council is to protect the physical health of the town, to allow it to perform its duties down the road. And I think the financial management, even if that is difficulty addressing the tax base and how that issues are going to be handled, might cost you some popularity, but it's the primary duty of the town council to make sure that going forward the town has the resources necessary to complete its obligations.
Second part.
Okay, let's go. ideologue and principle. Well, the first question, I think the principles that I would operate should be an ideal is that fairness and equity towards people, treating people fairly and trying to do as be as equitable as possible is your primary role in any job you take and do. I don't understand how ideologue, if you're principled, you can't let ideologuing affect the equity question. You really have to treat people as individuals and trying to deal with them equitably.
Right. Thank you. Ms. Kalamanis.
Well, as a member of the annexation area, I suspect that I may run into this situation where, in dealing with some issues, I may end up having to not, act, as people in the Northern Transition Zone would have expected me to, based on taking a look at the issues, and I may need to take budget decisions that may, continue to be more towards the downtown area of Carrboro versus, being something that affects the Northern Transition Zone. So I suspect that might be something that I, may be involved with and may cause some, unpopularity with decisions I have to make. But I have to stay open to, all sides, whether it's situations that are required with the Northern Transition Zone or downtown Carrboro, and try to make sure that I look fairly at all the sides. And if I take a look at, areas where, where I would, as answering affirmatively to that, where I would look at, looking at the ideals in the situation, I think part of, you take a look at, the Vision 2020 for Carrboro and where that's driving the town to. I think there's a lot of times where we're going to need to stay focused on that vision. That's probably a part where, if we want to attain that, we may not be able to be as practical as we would want all the time, because we need to take a look at, driving to that future situation.
Thanks. Mr. Marshall.
First, let me mind my manners and thank everybody for showing up. The folks who actually came out here are here in the audience, thank you very much. One of the things I love about Carrboro is the amount of citizen participation, and it's one thing that I always love about Carrboro. And I want to thank the board, Mayor Chilton, and the Board of Aldermen. On the first part, I'm going to go ahead and answer Mr. Zaffron the same way that I did in the Indy, and hopefully with better effect. I didn't get the endorsement. Basically, I was one of the things that that's really important to me is that we have universal internet access here in Carrboro. And for a lot of people, I think they'd look at that and they say, that sounds like such a splurge, but it's not. There are children here in Carrboro who don't have access to the internet. When I was growing up, I grew up poor. My dad was a blue-collar worker, but one thing he did have was an Encyclopedia Britannica in the house. And I always read that. I was reading it from the time that I could read until I left the house. And that was my internet. But the internet has so many different things, so many possibilities, that for me to start talking about it would go way beyond 30 seconds I have. So let me just say really quickly, that is something that many people don't agree with me about, but I'm passionate about. And as far as being an ideologue, it's a matter of passion. It's a matter of reason. And it's a balance between the two.
Thanks. Mr. Kirshner. No, Mr. Kirshner already answered this question. Sorry. The next question will be from Alderman Brown.
I have a two-part question, too.
We're going to start with David Marshall.
List the top three characteristics needed for good leadership and why.
I've been in the military for 22 years, and there is no other place, there's no other crucible where leadership is tested in a more life and death kind of way than the military. the number one is leading by example, living your life in such a way that is an example to other people. As a soldier, I expect a lot from the people that are under me, but I put myself at the highest standard. The second thing for leadership is making hard choices. There is no such thing, especially when we're talking about government and when we're talking about the lives of people, decisions that are going to affect people in very personal ways. There is no easy choice. Do we build up? Do we have 4 or 5-story buildings? How is that going to change the character of the town? Do we develop here? What do we do with environment? How do we balance all these interests? Leadership is about coming up with a decision, about having the strength of will to come up with the right decision. And it's about the moral courage of seeing it through. And thirdly, I think that leadership is about empathy, and it's about heart, and it's about caring and understanding and putting yourself in the other person's position and caring deeply about that position.
Thanks. Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you. Along with leading by example, it's putting yourself, being able to lead to a higher standard as well. I mean, when you're dealing with properties, people's property and lives, there's a higher standard than you necessarily have to apply to yourself. You know, you have to. And what I've learned through some of my management situations is people will respond to you when you're asking to do something you're willing to do yourself. When you're willing to apply what you ask of them to yourselves or do what you ask them to do. And it's a level of being able to take an understanding and willing to understand what their situation is, see how you can, if what you're asking them may be too much for them, or can they be useful, helpful to the community in various other ways is what you may be asking of them. So it's leading by the example of work the best you can, but part of that example is being willing to do the work yourself. Being open and open-minded enough to, and be understanding and willing to be learn and understand the situation, and looking to the higher standard of what is required for what you're being asked to do. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Vickers.
I'm going to repeat the question, make sure I got it correct.
Okay. List the top 3 characteristics needed for good leadership and why.
In the public forum and where you need to build consensus, the ability to communicate and to receive communication is critical. You have to be open, and you have to be perceived as somebody who people will come to and talk to and feel free to express their ideas. That's critical. The second item, I think you need to be able to build consensus when you feel you have come to a position that you think the community should support. You have to have the ability to build consensus with your colleagues on the board or on the alderman to listen to them, respect their positions, and try to find some consensus points where you can go forward with. It's very necessary to build consensus and to work with individuals. My experience has been a lot in corporations where it's very dictatorial, and I've also had to deal with the public in public issues, and it was very clear to me quite soon that one type of leadership where you have a clear line of military or very dictatorial authority works very well and efficient, but it does not work in a public setting. You need to have the skill of working with other people respecting their views, having empathy for them, and drawing out their views so you can work to build a consensus to go forward with it, or else you will fail. You also have, the third point is, if you have those properties, you have to have the respect of the community and be able to demonstrate by your example that you're willing to work hard and lead. That's it.
Thank you. Ms. Kalamanis.
Right. I'd say probably the first skill I would talk about is the ability to listen, because you know, so many times people, you know, run ahead and think of the next question or what they want to go through, and it's really important to be seen as somebody who listens to everyone, gives them the due course of time that they need to tell their story and so on. So listening, I think, is a very important characteristic. Another is a very strong sense of community service. To be in this position, you do have to realize that probably, you know, a lot of your time isn't your own. You have to be able to make yourself available, and I think that that's a very important part of that. And somebody who can be a team builder would probably be a very important last characteristic, who can work very effectively with the people in the community and the work people on the board with them and so on. So those are all three, I think, very critical aspects to the leadership skills that an alderman needs to have.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Alderman Herrera, and we'll start with you, Ms. Kalamanis.
Well, we know we're all doing this job for the big bucks, but also this is about municipal governance, right? So let's move from the personal to governance. In your own words, identify the main elements of good governance. Elaborate on those elements that you feel very passionate about it and that you expect to bring to this board if appointed.
Okay. Well, I was under a misconception. I thought it was the big bucks. So, I think that that's an excellent question. The important thing there to consider is in the area of governance, you need to make sure that as you're looking at policy making and what you're doing, that you consider the whole of the community, not just a particular segment. We need to make sure that we understand the diversity in the town. We make, you know, affordable housing available. Just today, I ran into someone who's one of the resource officers in one of our schools and mentioned to me he had an 11-year-old daughter, and I said, oh, goes to the school. I could never afford to live here. So I think that there's a lot we need to do in order to provide the right services for everyone, to make sure this community stays as an inclusive community, that we have the new tax bases to be able to drive more people to look at this community as the one that they want to live in. So taking a look at outside sources so that we make sure that we can provide the best government services without impacting further the taxes for the people in the community.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Marshall.
I want to thank Alderman Herrera for that question, because it's a perfectly suited question for this, for the context and forum that we're in right now. To give you an insight on what kind of alderman I would be, governance to me is about employing every skill that you have and every skill that you don't have. It's reaching deep inside of yourself. I believe that I have tried in my life to reach a point where I can be proud of my achievements and to be able to employ those achievements, those skills, those talents that I've gained from a lifetime of learning. And I wish I could be falsely modest, but I think they're considerable skills, and these are perfectly suited for governance. Why? Law, the study of law, teaches you to be critical in your thinking. Public policy, which is what I got a master's in, teaches you how to problem solve and make decisions based on reason. My experience as a Hispanic has, and some of the discrimination and prejudice that I've experienced as a result, has given me a sense of empathy for other folks. My parenthood, my sense of being a parent, gives me empathy for parents out there. Being a single parent makes me realize just how hard it is for other single parents. I am a part of this community. I'm a part of the South Orange Rescue Squad because I care about this community. I think governance is marshaling everything, all your qualities and all your life experience, towards the aim of making your town better.
Thank you. Mr. Kirshner.
The draws me to the governments is really more of an grown up and led civil duty that I just kind of learned over time. I think as I mentioned before, I've been volunteer firefighting since I've been 18. It's quite a few years, but it's back in Connecticut, and it's just something I was kind of led to do. Is just you apply, you allow yourself to assist in the governance of people. I didn't really choose to be on a board of directors at a homeowner association. The situation arose where I had to step up to the plate, and I was asked to, and can't get off of now, but it's learned that I have a duty to serve to the public what I can give. I many times consider working for the university, being a state employee, I'm doing a civic duty. So it's but I look at, in the role that I take, I look at, well, what is my duties as in that role, such as board of directors or board of aldermen. And I'd have to consider one of the tasks as a board of aldermen is to utilize staff to come up with, put together policy, do the research for us. But then it's kind of incumbent on me to make sure that we're not going beyond, they're not overstepping boundaries. So, again, it comes back to what is good for the community, but keep the boundaries in line as well. It's our duty to oversee that. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Vickers.
As governance to be would mean good governance is the ability for on a board to work issues so that the community has as much individual freedom to pursue their lives as possible without impacting adversely on each other. I am worked my whole career with rules and regulations and such, and I've learned that often you affect people unintentionally by rules, not in the way you expect to. And that's when you go ahead and formulate governance rules of how people should behave or what the town is, you have to be very careful that you don't overprescribe what you intend to do, because often the unintended consequences of very enthusiastic governance is negative, and that's something that you need to be very careful of. And I believe that's it's really an issue of individual respecting people's right to make their own decisions as much as possible. And it's a very important factor in governance that you make that a goal all the way through your
duties that you perform as a council or an alderman, as an alderman, councilman or an alderman. Okay.
Thank you. Our final question of the evening is going to come from Alderman Haven O'Donnell.
Okay.
And the first respondent will be Mr. Vickers again. Okay. We'll go back down to Ms.
I want to thank you. It's been a long evening, and you're being the last group. You've had a long time to wait, so I appreciate that. The Board of Aldermen are interested in community building and recognizes the increased potential of a cultural divide amongst Carrboro citizens. How would you define and what recommendations would you make to address this concern and foster community building?
Community building, I think, is necessary by allowing people to enjoy the assets of the community. I think people will associate with each other, and I think you do it through things like Carrboro Day and other activities where you draw people from your suburbs, if you want to call it suburbs, from downtown, other people to the same area through the farmers market. These build a common feeling, a sense of community, that Carrboro is their community, and it's not an isolated thing that you visit this town once in a while. It is necessary, I think, to have a sense of community. And I grew up in a very diverse area of Brooklyn. Like, it was basically an ethnic community. And your community at that point was your local two-block area, whether it was Italian or German or Puerto Rican or Norwegian. That was your community. I think there is much more diversity here. I think there's less racial identification than there was where I grew up in times. But I was the son of an immigrant. That's basically the immigrant model in New York at that time. And you basically see it. It's the reality is my family grew up in that area. It is now mostly Arab, Russian, and Korean. That's when I grew up was Italian, Puerto Rican, and Irish. It's just a transition that's happened. And then you're going to see that's the sense that but there was community there in ethnic groups. But I think your challenge here is building a community as we're part of Carrboro and that everybody is part of the town, and you're going to bring in from the doctors to the workers to whoever, whatever your role in life is, that you enjoy some common activities that will build community.
Thank you. Ms. Kalamanis.
I'd like to first thank the mayor and the board for giving me the opportunity to be up here, because prior to the election, of course, I couldn't have run coming from the Northern Transition Zone, so I appreciate this opportunity. In addressing your question, I think the more a community feels like they're involved, then the more that they will start working together more closely as a community. And one of the ways I see that as one of the things I would like to see implemented is what I talked about with the town hall approach, where we actually take members of the key boards within the community and an alderman or the mayor and go to the community. Like, for instance, the Rogers Road community, there's a church there. Have a community forum at the church so that the people feel you've come to them as well, so that you would bring these people in to talk about what are the key issues they're facing, so that we understand that, and then do another one of these, maybe on a once-a-month basis, do another one in a different area, and then, you know, so that the community starts feeling that you do value their input, and the more that you start being more inclusive with the community, then they will feel much more inclusive within here and spend more time and feel Carrboro is really listening to them. So I think that implementing this town hall approach, where on a monthly basis in the evening, so when people are finished with work, you go out there and talk to them, I think that you will start being able to get more inclusiveness within the community.
Thanks. David Marshall.
Well, this has been something of a protracted election season for me. I want to thank you guys. We learn from our lives, and we learn from important people. And you guys, we were in the campaign trail together, some of you, and most of you. And it was the best learning experience that I've ever had since I've come to the United States in terms of what it is, what democracy, what working democracy is. I thank you so much for that lesson in democracy. I knew what it was. I loved it. I went overseas and fought for it, but I didn't internalize it until I was able to live it with you guys. So no matter what the outcome of this forum is, thank you so much for that. I think community building is about being inclusive. It's about having walkable communities. It's about having the ability to walk to the store and say hi to your neighbor on the sidewalks, ride your bike and wave at your neighbor. I think it's about coming together and having consensus. But it's also about having conflict, but being amicable about it and being able to say there are disparate interests here and recognizing that not everybody's ever going to be happy, but recognizing that the duty, that you're duty-bound to try to do everything you can to bring the community together. The Carrboro Music Festival, the arts, the music, we draw from our strength. In Carrboro, we have these strengths. We can employ so much in our arsenal to build our community and I think to heal the rift between the northern region and the rest of Carrboro.
Thank you. Bob, you should enjoy this and get the last word.
I appreciate being the last word here. It's one interesting thing that my father was pretty famous for. He was sometimes it was bothersome, and sometimes we say, "Come on, Dad," but I observed in many very very intelligent and interesting people. One thing I noticed is they have no problem just going up to somebody and asking a question and then listening to the response. And it would be typical for my father to just stop someone in the street and just carry on a conversation with them. I haven't really developed so many of those skills, but I strive to. And I have been known to, when I have a concern, we'll just go out and ask people, what are your feelings? Carrboro is very unique. It is very diversified. And it has done, I feel, it's done a very good job of trying to make a community out of this diversification, such as using the arts and the arts festivals, having festivals, encouraging music festivals, encouraging sometimes ethnic and sometimes not so ethnic festivals and roundtables. The other part of that, as I said, is going out and approaching people when we're not getting feedback. Sometimes we have to approach them or challenge them. It's asking the questions and making everybody feel included. This, again, one thing I've noticed with Carrboro, and I would be striving to carry out, would be its sense of trying to be inclusive to everybody. Doesn't mean everybody has to agree. People can agree to disagree, but they're willing to have that conversation. And if not have a conversation, enjoy time together. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you all for coming tonight and sharing your thoughts. And thought that the Board of Aldermen asked some excellent questions that I'm glad I didn't have to answer. And at this point, y'all are welcome to take a seat in the audience. It is 9:04, and we just ask if the board wants to have any discussion about the candidates or about what process we may use on January 31st. Jackie.
I just want to say that I am so moved tonight that I could almost cry. I've never been prouder or more in love with my town than I am tonight. I think to have 12 people, 12 such very different people, put themselves forward, put themselves on the line in a way that, frankly, is harder than when we run for office. And the thought and the caring that's gone into everybody's answers and into the thought and caring that went into everybody's questions. I'm just once again amazed and in love with this town. And what was running in the back of my mind was what my dad used to say during elections was, no matter how bad it is, no blood was spilt. You know, and no, I mean, that speaks to grassroots democracy. And we have some very different ideas and some very different approaches. But it's all done in the sense of moving the community forward with goodwill and hope. And so often in this world and in our own country right now, any political I hate to use the word power because it's just the Board of Aldermen, but any sense of political power or authority meets with a great deal of rancor and distrust and manipulation and meanness. And I think we prove here in Carrboro that it's possible to rise above all of that, you know, and if we can do it, anybody can do it, you know. So I'm just so thankful to all of you for coming forward. And once again, I will always thank God that I live in Carrboro. So thank you all for coming tonight.
I just want to say I'm really glad that Jackie has articulated this, because I sat here, you know, from about 6:15 on, and I just was so sure that this was going to unfold beautifully, and it really has. I'm very proud to have watched 12 applicants come forth and answer questions that during our campaign season, well, this was probably a good example of some of the toughest questions. And it was just, I want to thank the candidates, the applicants, candidates, and I want to thank the community, because it was just a wonderful sense of community that came out of this. It's pretty neat.
Alex?
Thanks. I don't think there's too much to add to what Jackie and Randy have said. I've been here behind this table for 10 years, and you see a lot of stuff go by the boards and a lot of the emotions, I think, that Jackie touched on, and the thoughtfulness that was shown tonight, again, on the part of the applicants and on the part of my colleagues, I think speaks well to the goodwill of everyone involved, and that we have common interests and that we've expressed them. And express them well. Mark, you were asking for some suggestions about process. Did other people have some ideas? I've got one that I can sort of throw out. From my perspective, I would just like to take this in and soak it in and cogitate on it and suggest that perhaps cogitate.
Because he's an old codger.
Think about it.
Pull out your laptop and Google up Wikipedia, and then we can talk about it later.
That
what we may want to do is to come into the 31st, going through our own whatever internal process you may wish to use, and perhaps narrow down to a field of, say, 3 or 4 that are your top picks, and then we can see if there's some commonality that bubbles to the surface. Obviously, if that doesn't happen, then we'll just have to throw it all in the Cuisinart and hash through it. That's just an idea for how we may wish to prepare ourselves.
I'm with you 90% of the way. I really think we all need to. There's an awful lot to digest, and we need to kind of think about it and go back over our notes or however it is that we each in our own way, you know, does this. As far as the actual selection, I would like us to start with people nominating, putting names forward, getting a second and voting. My fear, I like collaboration, I like collaborative efforts and consensus. I would, my fear is that, how do I put this? I don't want us to get ourselves in a situation where the person who ends up on the board is everybody's third choice or second choice. So I think we need to structure it in a way that's voting. Do you understand where I'm going?
Yeah, I was
with that?
Thinking ultimately, yes, that we would have to go through a nominating process. Here's a question that I have, which we may have to ask the attorney, or Mark, you may know. Are we going to have to ultimately, when we arrive at a point where we are going to have to take a vote and make an ultimate decision, are we going to need a majority or a plurality in order to select a candidate?
Just a majority.
It's going to be a motion, and so it's got to have a majority. Which, in other words, somebody needs to have 4 affirmative votes out of 6.
Right.
They don't have to have 5.
In order to win. They don't have to have 5.
Yeah, they don't. Mm-hmm.
But 3 would not do it.
Right. That makes sense.
I want to suggest procedurally, partly because I feel like it literally would be impossible for us to make a bad decision, in the sense that I find all 12 candidates acceptable. I want to suggest that, and in that sense, I'm not strictly speaking like opposed to any of them. I want to suggest a little bit different voting style. And the way I'm picturing doing this is that we would have a paper ballot in which we would list out the 12. We wouldn't necessarily start with this. We have a discussion, and we can do some straw polls or whatever. But that ultimately, when we vote, we have a ballot that lists the 12 candidates, mm-hmm. and that each of us would mark an affirmative vote for one candidate, and we collect up those 6 ballots and announce which candidates got what kind of vote totals. My thinking about this is, my thought here is essentially that that puts us in a position of being able to focus strictly on the question of who we want to affirmatively vote for, rather than putting us in the position of saying, well, I nominate candidate X, and then you're put in the position yes or no on candidate X, when that question's maybe not pertinent, in the sense that it's not so much that you're against candidate X as that you're in favor of candidate Y. So if you can picture how this would work, because it's a strictly affirmative vote, it's possible that, for example, it would take more than one round of balloting to get to the point where any one candidate would have 4 affirmative votes.
Are we allowed to do that?
We can certainly pass that question on to our town attorney at a later time, and we don't necessarily, absolutely, I'm not asking anybody to commit to this procedure. I'm just throwing it out there. This is a voting procedure that I've used in North Carolina local government before,
okay.
So I feel fairly confident that it's lawful.
Okay.
But I'm glad to get the attorney's point of view.
I'm comfortable with that if it's legal. But some people aren't.
I'm going to have to think about it. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that or not. And I'm just going to have to tell you. I'm going to have to think about it. Because I sort of didn't envision that. I mean, it seems to me the same similar thing if you just, I mean, without having a paper ballot, because people are going to know anyway. I think it's like in some respects, I think it's an open meeting and you got to put your hand up anyway.
Yeah, these paper ballots, in order to be valid, mm-hmm. as votes, would need to be signed, and in other words, to identify who had voted which way, and they need to be public records, so they would be, they'd be open for inspection.
I'm gonna have to think about it. I'm just have to think about it.
Here's what makes me kind of queasy about that. I understand the impulse in trying to avoid putting anyone behind the eight ball or in a position where, I understand the impulse and that makes sense. However, that process could set us up so that on a paper ballot, we arrive at a decision without actually having an open discussion prior to taking a vote. And these folks have all come here and shared their thoughts with us. And I think we owe it to them and to the community prior to actually taking any formal action to share our thoughts and our thought processes with the public. It may make us uncomfortable. It may make us uncomfortable, but that's why we get paid the big bucks, to be uncomfortable. And if we say something that somebody doesn't like, well, that we have five others.
None of us have done that.
Will not be uncomfortable.
Who, me? No.
I agree absolutely
but we can,
with that.
I mean, this way we use each other as resources, and that's it may be a little messier, but I really think that that's where I have a problem with that.
I just want to jump in here and say that I'm overwhelmed by everything I was listening to tonight. And I, right now, just listening to, proposed procedural steps is even an awful lot to consider. I really think that, for me personally, when I go through all these notes and I sit and think through, I may be able by the 31st to have a sense of, what next steps would make the most sense. And I just want to say for the record that I'd be open to, what? Did that answer?
No, this is totally fine.
Go
ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
Excuse us.
It's
not paying attention to you right now.
That's what's going on.
No. It's better than that. Go ahead.
Is it a basketball game score?
No. It's not. Better than that. Yeah. It's better than that.
Get some money?
No, we ain't getting no money.
I'm cool. Whatever,
Okay. Cool. Well, we will have some more discussion at a later point, including potentially as late as January 31st at the beginning of that meeting about what procedure we'll use. I don't throw that possibility out there wasn't really expecting a decision on that particular possibility tonight. So let's all give some thought to that and to all of the candidates. I'm pleased to announced to you all that it is my understanding that the Chapel Hill Carborough School Board has just decided to name the third high school Carborough High School.
Well worth being interrupted for. Wonderful.
All right. Well,
very good.
Thank you to the Chapel Hill Carborough School Board.
That's pretty cool.
Alderman Herrera.
I agree. We need to digest that. Also, we have a questionnaire, and we did some questions, and another way to do is to do a little matrix and put some value to the answers. To see what we're looking for in every person, we need to have a criteria. I mean, this is like a job application. And,
I think if you want to use that for your own evaluative tool,
to select,
great.
Select my final, start weeding out the...
I'm not a matrix kind of gal. Couldn't do that.
Well, and I don't think there's not necessarily any reason for us to assume that we would have an entirely common set of values about
what
evaluation criteria would be. And
the
voters have complex opinions and they've come up with this complex board. So, I think that's a valid tool for some of us individually to use if that's what we choose to do. Are there any other thoughts anybody wants to share at this point?
No, the only thought that I wanted to share was to thank all of the applicants for their hard work. I've been on that side before, and it is not easy. And I commend just the high level and quality of the questionnaires and also the answers and the responses you gave to us, because I know it is not an easy position to be in. And I appreciate the kind of... service that you want to provide to Carborough.
Yeah.
And other than that, I would say move to adjourn.
Second.
It's been probably moved and seconded that we adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
All right.